Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good Tuesday morning, Seattle. The Mariners did it. Hi, howdy.
Hey.
The Mariners did it. The Mariners put an all-analyst booth together there with Blowers and Ryan Roland-Smith and Dan Wilson. I believe my buddies at ESPN did it in the WNBA world with Kara Lawson and crew of an all-analyst show. So we just decided today, Salk's out, we just kicked him out.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. We're going all analysts today.
That's right.
All analysts. Boy, howdy, Lydia, Kyle.
Analyst.
Heaps and myself. Just all five of us. Just going to do the show together. How's that sound?
Ready to do it better than it's ever been done.
And I know when you were winning Gatorade State Player of the Year, Jake. I know when you were the top national recruit. I know before you headed off to BYU and were conference player of the year, freshman of the year, set all those records. I know one day when you're up there at Skyline High School, you envisioned, said, one day. Brock and I are going to do a radio show together. Brock and I are going to do this sports radio thing together.
I dreamed of it.
I know one day this thing is going to happen.
And you know what? Those dreams came
true. And here we are, my friend.
Here we are.
Well, I'll tell you this. We're going to get to a little bit more of that Earl sound. Just listening to Pete yesterday. I had about 10 responses as Lydia played those final clips. We will get to that at 7:30 from a pretty unique perspective that Jake had, actually being inside those walls. And did he see that coming? And in your final conversation, when you found out you were not going to be a Seahawk anymore. So we'll get into all of that at 7:30. But I'm sorry, man. Last night we got to watch one heck of a show.
It was incredible.
How good is Patrick Mahomes? How much you want to overreact right now?
Oh, I mean, I think the easy thing is to go completely overboard on this. I think the thing that was most impressive to me, outside of all of the insane physical things that he did as a quarterback, and you just watch and go, man, I could only dream of doing some of these things, right? But the thing that was so cool to me was he didn't play a good football game until the fourth quarter, right? And he's been lighting up the NFL the start of the season, and to see him face some early adversity, to go into a fourth quarter into a hostile environment against a divisional rival and to be able to perform the way he did in that fourth quarter was pretty special.
Was I alone? Was I the only one out there? No, I wasn't, because I got texts from my buddies. I got emails from some of my friends that said, you know what? I remember when this quarterback in this town, in this hat you're wearing right now, this Russell Wilson Passing Academy, I remember when this guy in our market was just empowered to be creative. I remember when this quarterback in this town was the talk of the country. I remember when this quarterback in this town made plays like this that everybody sat in utter amazement.
Kelsey's a man on the track. Here comes Von Miller. Oh, how did he pull that off? He got it to Hill, and they've got a first down.
How did he pull that off? Patrick Mahomes, with Von Miller chasing him down, runs full speed to his left. He can't turn and throw with his right hand.
Right.
So he's Farvian, and he just flicks it out there with his left and gets an enormous third down conversion in that fourth quarter. Where is that guy? Because the guy that we've watched the last couple weeks, we're number three, who's got so much insane creativity, who's got so much an immense ability, Jake, he's not been empowered.
No.
And enabled to do what we just saw last night with a first-year player.
Honestly, it's been more of, hey, don't screw it up. Like, we have a plan. We are going to run the ball, and we are going to play ball control offense. And it's always been, since he's gotten here, don't turn the ball over, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's been beyond that. We don't want to open this thing up. And it's been evident. It's been evident throughout this entire first part of the season.
Now, is that Arizona? And a rookie quarterback and an 0-3 team. And as Pete said to us yesterday, multiple times, we're going to be conservative.
Yeah, but Brock, I am kind of fascinated by that you would go into an Arizona Cardinals stadium, play conservative based off the fact that you're playing a rookie quarterback. I mean, that kind of is shocking to me, that you would center your whole game plan around it. And I get it. It makes sense. You're waiting for him to make the mistakes. And hopefully that he does make those mistakes and you can capitalize on it. But ultimately, don't you go in there after a good win versus Dallas, and you start to finally see this offense get some identity, that you go in there and wanting to build off that and wanting to be a little bit more aggressive?
Can you be a run-first team, which is, they say balance. It's not balance. Okay, they don't want to be 50% run, 50% pass because, frankly, and I don't want them to be because I don't think Sweezy and Effetti and Fluker are most equipped to do that. I think those guys are most equipped to be close to 60% run.
Yeah.
And it's been even more than that the last couple weeks, and I think to the benefit of the overall team and certainly the run game. But can't this quarterback, can't some of the chains come off? Can't he be just empowered to be right alongside that run game, to be dynamic again?
Yeah, I think we would all love to see that. I think that's what we are wanting to see, and I think that's what the fan base is looking at going, this isn't the same Russell. We haven't seen him take off and run with it. We haven't seen him make some of the spectacular plays that he's made, and I think that's a perfect phrase of it, is he hasn't been empowered to do so necessarily. And I fully agree with you that this team is only going to be successful if they can establish the run.
Yes.
We're not arguing that fact. They absolutely have to establish the run. This offensive line can't go and empty all game long and protect. They can't do it. But you have to be able to establish the run and then play off of it.
Can this QB play as Patrick Mahomes did last night? Can this QB play unconscious?
Absolutely.
Can this QB just really empower then the teammates around? Because you just felt that yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Those guys could not wait to see what this quarterback Mahomes was going to do next.
Right.
You know, he gets in that huddle, and they were talking about it post-game. They just, there's a Favre-like excitement. I can't wait to play. And I just been watching this, you know, and it started to erode a little bit over the last couple of years. But certainly this season, as much as ever, is, and this is with a young defense, by the way, playing well. This is with a lot of inexperience on that defensive side of the ball.
Right.
And it is still Russell, don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Russell, don't screw it up.
It's been fascinating to watch, and I think ultimately they are looking at this as trying to get through this season. Offensively, defensively, and it's been an interesting approach. I mean, I look at it and people have been pointing to, well, when the Pittsburgh Steelers tore everything down and they went 8-8 and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger was putting up big numbers. Drew Brees was putting up big numbers when they were trying to retool their franchise. That was a completely different situation. They had a completely different philosophy. They had their offense still intact and were trying to rebuild their defense. And Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees still had their weapons. They still had a very solid offensive line protecting them and running backs and all those things. And so those guys were empowered to go out there and try and win football games for them.
Is this a team that can score 30 points a game? Is this a team that you want to see? Because part of me, as we're having this, I've got like a million thoughts in my head.
Yes. Yeah.
Hold on a second. The first week, you know, he was flinging it around pretty good, right? And they were throwing it all over the place. And he had three touchdowns and, I don't know, 300 yards passing, but they lose.
Yeah.
Right? In the second week, you know, a little bit more, and he took an absolute beating and six sacks because you can't block, you know, Khalil Mack, and you can't have those open edges against guys. So, I'm sorry, Russell, you don't have Kelsey. You don't have a running back. You don't have these pieces. You don't have that O-line.
Correct.
And because of it, we're going to ask you to truly manage this game in a way that maybe you didn't even do your rookie year.
Well, and I think the perfect guy to do that is Russell Wilson, because this guy doesn't care about statistics. He truly doesn't. He cares about winning football games. And that's why he and Pete Carroll are essentially the perfect marriage. Since they've gotten together, the same philosophies, the same talk, the same speak, right? And the same mindset that it's about winning football games. And so I would go out on a limb and say that Russell Wilson is probably the only top five quarterback, the only superstar quarterback that would be okay taking this approach and saying, okay, I understand what our offensive philosophy is. I just want to do my part and help this team win games, even if that means I'm not going to have the greatest statistical season.
Now, that philosophy is great, to beat Josh Rosen, a rookie in Arizona who's depleted in an 0-3 team. That philosophy is great, to play the Dallas Cowboys at home with Dak Prescott, who's in a little bit of a shell himself, who likewise has been asked to just manage things and not make mistakes. This crew that's coming in Sunday?
It's a different ball game.
This crew that's coming in Sunday, you're going to be able to take that philosophy? You're going to take that belief? You're going to take that play call sheet?
They're going to try.
You think so?
Absolutely.
You don't think they'll open it up at all?
No.
It's going to be a run-first team.
It's going to be a run-first
team. We're done with this balance stuff. It's going to be a run-first team, and it's 7-10, and we are ready for everything you need to know.
Need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, up first, lots of conversation in the building yesterday with the Seattle Seahawks still about their injury report. And in a week where they're going to need all hands on deck with the hottest team in the NFL, the LA Rams, coming into town, you are going to get some bodies back. Ethan Postick looks like he's coming off that ankle. He will be ready to go. Deion Jordan should be ready to go by Sunday. And, man, do they ever need that pass rush. Chris Carson, after a week off with a hip injury, is going to battle to get back on a practice field. All of those guys should be back. But KJ Wright, still a few weeks away. And that one leaves me scratching my head. That was a cleanup. That was a scope. That was going to be a couple weeks. And now we're almost 6 weeks out. That one leaves me scratching my head. And a shout out to Paul Allen. He went public yesterday with his battle. He's going to battle again. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Paul, we are cheering for you. We are rooting for you. And we know you are going to battle through.
Sending love your way, man.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, Scott Service, Jerry DePoto held their year-end presser yesterday, much to the chagrin of one Mike Saul. Jerry DePoto will not tear down that wall. Jerry DePoto made it pretty clear yesterday he is not going to tear down that Mariners team.
What?
And I think Salk's over there with a sledgehammer. Part of the reason Salk is not here today is you may see him down at Safeco Field.
It's probably not a good idea to have him on after this.
But Mel Stoudemire, there was some news out of it. Looks like pitching coach Mel Stoudemire will not return for the 2019 season. Ichiro Suzuki will be invited as a minor league invite. He will be invited to camp. He will make that trip to Japan. More than likely, he will find a spot on their roster as the Mariners begin their season in Japan. But plenty of conversation to talk about with the Mariners later.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this squad. Obviously, Salk was emphatic on trying to tear this thing down. But ultimately, Jerry DePoto feels that, hey, we've got the pieces. We've got pieces around, and if we just get the right guys, we can get over the hump.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
It's a big day. A big day that, this may not be on the front page of the headlines, as there's still lots of Earl Thomas conversation, lots of Russell Wilson conversation, lots of Seahawks and Mariners with their year-end. And, by the way, John Morosi is going to join us at 9. But it is a big day back east in New York City. Todd Leiwicki and Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin are in New York City this morning to present to the NHL Executive Committee.
Yes.
They've got their ducks in a row. They've got their clearance from the Seattle City Council, an 8-0 unanimous vote to move ahead with their $700 million plan to renovate Seattle Center. And today, they make their pitch to Gary Bettman and the NHL Board of Governors. We've been waiting on this day. It's actually the Executive Committee. It's got to go to the committee first. It then ultimately has got to be voted on. But this is next on the checklist of everything that they laid out as far as the order of how this thing was going to go. All right, they were going to do all the work they had to do politically in town. They've got that done. They're going to lay out their plan and put their money aside. They've got that done. Now, most importantly, they've got to head back to New York to the NHL meetings, where I think there's a lot of positive momentum, where everything is building in the right direction. But they make their presentation today back to Gary and the NHL.
Absolutely. This is exciting news, and I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing an NHL team here in Seattle in about 2 years, 2 to 3 years. And this fan base is ready. They're excited. The fan support is going to be there. And I think that's the really cool thing is, we are in a direction that Seattle is going to have a new pro franchise, and can't wait.
710, that's everything you need to know. We do that every day at 710. Not with Jay Keeps and myself, though. Usually there's a guy leading it, Salk, who's much cleaner, he's much smoother. This is going to be a little rugged.
Bear with us.
It's going to be a little analyst.
It's like switching your offensive coordinator and then trying to figure out a new offense.
Yeah, that's
right?
Exactly right. Huh. Boy, howdy, that's a good comparison.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yes. Hey, were you last night? You said you were up late. You were at the WWE event. Is that right? No.
Oh. I was not watching.
Oh, no. You were not watching.
I was not.
No, but even they were talking about, the Sonics going to return Friday. They're going to play the Sacramento Kings in the exhibition game. And which guy was the one? Who was the one that made the little comment?
Who's the guitar guy? Anyways, no?
No WWE fans? No,
sorry, I'm out on that.
You're out on that. Lids, were you watching that? You weren't watching WWE?
Can't
right?
say that I was.
I only watch real sports.
Okay, well, even the WWE acknowledged that the Sonics were done wrong. Should have never left that arena. And good to see it's going to be scraped here sooner rather than later, going to be built up. And I agree with you, Jake. This is a, I think, almost a foregone conclusion that you don't put all of this work, you don't put all of this hay in the barn, you do not have Todd Leiwicki leaving his job on Park Avenue unless they know they're going to get this done with the NHL Executive Committee today, ultimately the Board of Governors, and then ultimately we get a franchise to root for.
Let's 7:15,
we talk to the professor on the road.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
Well, good morning to you, JC.
Good morning, guys.
How was that night last night on the sidelines, Roman, Monday night football, doing your work, doing your job? What was that setting like?
Oh, that was a blast. I mean, boy, you talk about a great game, a lot of drama. You can see that it was funny because you go back to the opener, Seattle-Denver, and clearly you know that here's the Seahawks coming up mile high, 80-some degrees, and they were gassed. But by they got to the fourth quarter, the Denver Broncos were the team that was gassed. And I could see, like, for example, Chris Harris, he had to stumble in and off the field right before a couple plays, then go in and get an IV. And I saw that Bradley Chubb, he was all tired. And what it was, constantly trying to fight. And if you're on defense, trying to hold back that offense with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, because there's so much motion, so many things that you have to pay attention to, and then so much running. In fact, I think the number that was done by Patrick Mahomes, he had 192 yards passing out of the pocket, and I think that's the most in NFL history.
Yeah,
Patrick Mahomes is an absolute superstar.
Absolutely. It was so much fun to watch him and to watch him play backyard football, essentially, and be able to make all these plays. It was pretty amazing kind of following the game, what the talk was about Mahomes and fans and amongst his players. What was his teammates saying about him after the game?
It was funny because, the only people that actually believed that he could do this early were the coaches. Because, the coaches have been fans of his really way back into college. I mean, because they used to sit around on Saturdays and they would watch some of the games that he would play. And they just marveled at it. And it started with Matt Nagy, the former offensive coordinator who's now in Chicago. Then Eric Bieniemy and some of the other guys, they all kind of chimed in. And so he was a favorite of theirs. But the players, there's no way that they thought this was going to happen this fast. I mean, they respect him. They know he's a great football player, a fun guy to play with. But they never expected him to be able to take the playbook the way he has. I know after the game, we interviewed Travis Kelce. And Travis said before the game, it's like, no, he surprised all of us. I said, what new things did you do? He says, he's constantly surprising us because his intake on the play is phenomenal. His ability to execute the plays is phenomenal. And really, I mean, you're just basically seeing the mobile Brett Favre emerge because he's got Brett Favre-type throwing ability, but he also has that great ability to run outside and make things happen.
Well, it's interesting, John, and I got a bunch of texts and even some emails from friends that said, you know what, I remember watching a QB in Seattle like that. I remember back in 2012, 2013, when we had a guy that was allowed and empowered to create, and there was some imagination and there was some playmaking, and now you watch what Russell is being asked to do, and you were there Sunday. Could you feel that at all? How much they're just kind of limiting his limitless mind and limitless opportunities?
Well, I think what it comes down to is just a matter of trying to find better ways to execute. And I think that you can see growth in what they're doing. But, you saw the first two games. I mean, they had him do too much. I mean, they're not getting the running game going. But in the last two games, I think that you can see that now they tried more run pass options. But the thing is, they didn't let Russell run. I just wonder, is that in part because he's got a little bit of a hamstring thing that, not that they're concerned about, but they don't want to really test until they really need him to run in the third and fourth quarter. But I think the big thing that they wanted to try to do in the last 2 weeks is expand the running game. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It was kind of interesting because, everybody thought that they were going to be able to get Chris Carson out there with that hip injury, but they didn't. And so then they come back and they let Mike Davis, and they added more run pass. I mean, they added more run pass options. They added more running plays. And I think that you can see they took to it. So I think it's getting the offensive line better. But still, this offense is still trying to find its identity. And I think as time goes on, you'll see a little bit more Russell running. And I think maybe a little bit more quicker passing.
Well, JC, it was interesting sitting with Pete yesterday. And a couple different times, he, out of his mouth, said conservative. that they were going to be conservative both defensively and offensively against a rookie and an 0-3 team. Certainly with who's coming in at 4-0 on Sunday, that game plan of playing it conservative is not going to work, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. I think you have to really open things up because you realize, I don't care if right now the Seahawks, I think, ranks 7th on defense in yards allowed. Surprisingly, I mean, their pass numbers on defense really rank among the top 5 or 6 in the league. They've done a good job there, but now you got a quarterback who can throw for 350 to 400 yards. You've got an offense that drives you crazy because of all the moving parts that it has. And so, I mean, there's no way, particularly, you know, losing Earl Thomas like they did, because what that took away, because you saw a little bit more of it each week, you know, you're going into more three safety type looks. And I think to go against the Rams, you almost have to go in the three safeties to help on some of the coverage things. And so now I think what's going to end up happening is that, yeah, you've got to add more things to be creative, because if you just try to do a conservative game plan, then you're going to end up losing somewhere like 31-17.
Well, you've been scooting around the country a little bit, Arizona to Denver, and you're obviously going to be back home today. More time in that database. As you start to plug in numbers, John, how much money do you think that injury to Earl cost him?
I think probably $7 million a year. Because here's the way I'm looking at it, because with the fact that he's now coming off his second broken leg, that what he's going to have to try to do is take a one-year prove-it type of contract. And so with a one-year prove-it type of contract, he's not going to be able to get like a franchise number. So what he's going to probably have to do is take like 1 year, six, maybe 1 year, $7 million. Kind of like what you saw with Tyrann Mathieu when he went down to Houston. I think he got 1 year, $7 million. So I think he lost about $6 million, because I think his open market value clearly would be $13 million plus. But I think this costs him at least $6 million a year.
Hey, last thing here. We're going to get into a little discussion about Coach Carroll and some of just his empathy and his compassion for his guys. Have you been around many coaches that seem to care about his players as much as Pete does here?
Well, I mean, I think most coaches do, but maybe not to the degree that Pete does, because, I mean, Pete's such a caring person and somebody that I think that you can see always is trying to set a great agenda, but also, you know, all the other things that are there too. So, no, I think that, you see it. Sometimes the coaches just kind of get wrapped up. I mean, you know, the Eric Manginis and that, they're just so focused on just getting the game plan through. But, no, I think Pete ranks among the best as far as that, because he really cares about his players. He cares about their families. He cares about so much of that.
And the rumors aren't true, right? That middle finger was not in any way directed at you. There were some rumors flying around yesterday.
No, because it was I was five yards behind it. I mean, you know, Earl did it at the 30-yard line, and I'm right behind him at the 25.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
So, no, it wasn't directed, because it went the other way. So yeah. His back was toward me, so it wasn't toward me, no way.
Did you notice it right away?
Yes, I did. In fact, I started asking the security guards, and they were going the other way. They thought, no, that wasn't that finger. No, it was a different finger. No, they thought it was, you know, the pinky, and I said, no, I don't think so. Yeah. But, no, I saw it right away.
Hey, JC, have safe travels. It'll be a fun week of some big-time football, and glad you got to experience that last night in Monday Night Football.
I had an absolute blast. My first game for Westwood One on the sidelines, and it was so much fun.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was so much fun last night, just to watch that game and take it all in. It was fun yesterday talking to Pete, too. It was a little different conversation. I think it went a lot deeper than just a conservative game plan. It went to his relationships with players. I asked him just point blank where this grace and empathy comes from, Jake, because, you know, a lot of folks in the fan base still don't feel that, still don't have that. And
right.
I've got my own frustrations with it to a degree. But you were actually, of the five of us analysts here this morning, you were actually the one that was inside the walls. You were the one that got ultimately let go as well from Pete and John. I'm curious what that conversation was, how empathetic he was for you in that situation, and your take on Earl as well. We'll get to all of that. Jake's in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
You're down on First Avenue. Wave at Salk today. He's trying to tear that thing down. They're not tearing it down. No, actually, Salk is out today. Jake Heaps is in his place. It's Brock and Salk here. Is Coach Carroll really this sympathetic? Does he really have this level of empathy? Yesterday, as I sat with him, and he continued down the road of how he handled Earl Thomas, even flipping off the sidelines, and in many ways, I think flipping off Pete and John and his frustration with that injury, I asked Coach Carroll yesterday, where does this grace really come from?
Yeah.
Does grace come natural to you?
I don't know.
You seem to have a lot of grace.
I do have a clear sense with these guys about where they are and all they're dealing with at this young age, and they're trying to figure things out, and they deserve latitude, and they deserve understanding and empathy. They just, you know, they're trying to do what's right, and it's hard, you know, it's challenging, and everybody, you know, always has these easy observations that you should do this and you should do that, you know, and they don't get it. It's hard. And these guys are, they're not just going through football, they're going through life changes and futures and marriages and kids and everything else that they're trying to figure out, and all of the pressure to try to stay on top of it. There's a lot going on, and they just deserve a lot of you know, a lot of consideration and understanding and a lot of support and a lot of love to help them through it. And someday I'm not worried about where these guys are right now. I know someday they'll see things differently, and when they have a chance to look back, and I'm not worried about what that observation is going to look like to them.
You experienced it inside those walls. Was that true behind the scenes?
Absolutely.
That perception met reality?
Oh, absolutely. It was 100% real and genuine. And that's the one thing that there's lots of things that I love about Coach Carroll, and that's definitely one of those things that I can appreciate so much from Coach Carroll is just listen to that. When you listen to that clip, it sounds like a parent who loves his kids, who might be a little rebellious and they might go off and do their own thing. And he said, at some point, they're going to understand. They're going to understand what happened here, the love and the care, and some things didn't go the way that they wanted it to. But I still love and care for them. And that was 100% true. And he cared about all of us. And that is so rare in the NFL, like beyond rare. It's almost kind of incomprehensible. And when I was with New York and you've had your experiences, mm-hmm. you don't even want to walk or see the GM. It's uncomfortable to be around the head coach, right? And these guys were approachable, and they care. And when I was going through my situation, I was a guy who was just trying to make the roster. Those guys reached out to me. They cared. They talked. They communicate. Coach Carroll would come to me after practice and talk to me about how I'm doing and what are some things that I can improve on. And John Schneider would come up and talk to me and you know, tell me I'm doing a great job. And would, after, I'll never forget this, after OTAs and minicamp, he writes handwritten letters to every single player in that locker room. John Schneider does. Every one of them. Telling them, hey, this is what you do well. This is what I see in you. This is what I believe in you. And this is what you can do to be great. I mean, who does that?
Who flips on? Who then flips them off? Right? I mean, as amazing as that is, Jake, then I find myself a little bit down that road. You know, I try to be one that has grace and empathy. And certainly raising teenagers will it will further that. Whether you like it or not, man, it will absolutely further and have to further some of that. But that's the part of me that was just like, oh, then why, Earl? Why would you just turn that way? It was just truly that emotion, as Pete said, to give him some slack and give him some grace? Or the Richard Sherman, you just pile this stuff up, man, as Marshawn just doesn't care, as Richard Sherman throws you under the bus, as Michael Bennett's reading books, as Earl Thomas is flipping you off. Can you have that level of empathy? Can you have that level of tender touch to write you a handwritten letter? Can you have that in this grown man league?
I think they would argue yes. But I also think, going on to your point, that at some point you're allowing guys to take a step too far. And I think that's ultimately what you've seen over the last couple of years, is that this has just continued to boil and boil and boil, and now it's gotten to the level of what it is. And I know it hurts Pete. I know all this stuff hurts him deeply, because he cares, and there's so many factors and things, and that this is a business. This isn't personal, and ultimately I think they've taken it a little personal, and unfortunately I don't see that. I don't see it as a personal thing. I see it as a business, and I think whoever is giving these guys advice are not letting them see the clear picture in this.
Yeah, I don't think Coach Carroll is going to have a whole bunch more time with Earl. You know, he was asked yesterday about surgery or this or that. I think Earl is going to do what Earl wants to do now. I doubt they have very much conversation at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to franchise him. They won't play that game with him, and he's going to – if John Clayton's right, he's going to have to sign a one-year deal and a real prove-it deal. But when it comes to releasing players, and I'm curious your experience on this, when it comes to actually your final conversation with some guys, Coach Carroll takes that very seriously too.
It's a very important time, I think, in the exchange and the communication with the young guys, because knowing how much this means to them, they deserve the opportunity to talk it out, you know, and hear where, you know, where they came up short, or you know, what we thought of them, or what the future holds for them. And you know, I remember getting cut way back when, and it's still, I can remember every word of it, you know, and how that went down, so I treat it with a lot of respect, and I've tried to, you know, give the guy the chance to say what he wants to say and express what he wished he, you know. So when he walks away, I wish I'd have said this to the coach, you know. You know, what I find is our guys are really appreciative of being part of it. They know that this is a really hard team to make, and I think that almost every guy that leaves here has a chance to make another club.
And that was 5 years ago. Wow. How's that 5 years ago? Man, that's already 5 years ago, Jake. Did that too
Crazy.
Carry true with you in your last – can you remember your last conversation?
Well, yeah, I got cut four times from the Seahawks, so I had some experience with this. But all four times, it was a similar experience. And I will say that it's not this way for everybody. Not everybody got to talk to Pete. Not everybody got to talk to John. So I'll just say that. But
And not even four times.
And not even four times. Yes. I mean, it's quite a feat, you know. Yes. That's the part where I think it was good to be able to have that conversation with Coach Carroll and to be able to have that conversation with John, to be able to understand what they were thinking. Now, the conversation, obviously, every time you get cut is frustrating because they're saying things to you that you don't necessarily agree with, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a player, and I'm sure you've been there on that side of it. But ultimately, they were gracious and they did care, and they were encouraging. And in my situation, they were always encouraging me to stay ready and be ready to come back, because I was a guy that they wanted to bring back if things happened.
You're a note taker. I see that. We got a Blue 42, and I saw some of your answers to some of the questions that we've got, and I can't wait to hear some of them. If I would have asked you in 2016 when you were around this club,
yeah,
and you were on this team and you're on the practice squad, if I would have said, hey, Jake, write a script, write the conclusion, man, write the final chapter for this wave of players, these players that gave us an unbelievable run.
Unbelievable.
The best that this market has ever known. But write the final conclusion. Would it have been as ugly as it sure feels like it's been the last 12 months?
Absolutely not. You know, and that's the part that's just been so amazing, is so many of these guys, like Earl, for example, he was the first draft pick, the first round draft pick for this era. And he was the guy that was the first piece of the LOB. And Michael Bennett came back. The Seahawks believed in him, brought him back. Richard Sherman, they believed in him that he could be a converted wide receiver to corner and be mm-hmm. a superstar. There's all these guys, right? And ultimately, at the end of this thing, we're walking away going, man, this ended so badly. There's so many bad feelings in this.
There's so much bitterness.
Yes.
There's so much anger.
Right.
There's so much of, I don't even know, envy. The roots of all of it are.
Yeah, finger pointing, looking around.
Yet on the other side, the coach is unbelievably gracious.
Yeah.
And still, even to the end, even with the player doing something that I've never seen before, taking a golf cart and giving John, in an emotional moment, his final thought right there. Because, again, I don't think there's going to be much more communication between these two sides.
I would doubt it.
Even with that, this coach continues to, I think, to show his character, I guess 67 years of wisdom and maybe four decades of coaching,
yeah,
can teach you an awful lot. Certainly has Coach Carroll. Jake Heap's going to teach us a little bit of football. Who's his favorite play caller he's ever had? What is some of his favorite play calls?
This is an interesting question that I got. And I actually have it. Oh, come on, Jake, give us one guy. But I'm going to give you three guys for three different reasons.
And is Patrick Mahomes the most physically gifted quarterback? Those are two of the three questions I'll fire Jake Heap's way. We call him Blue 42. We do it every day at 7:45. And then you all come to life. Twitter world.
Yeah.
Some of the best questions that we have ever seen when it comes to football. It's Analyst
Day
here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
Wow, this is great. How much fun is this? I get to just sit and learn. Three good football questions with three good football answers from Jake Heaps this morning. Jake's in for Salky. It's Bronk and Salk here this morning. Don't worry, Salky, we'll be back this week. Question number one for you. We started this show talking play calling, some of the conservative nature of what's going on in Seattle to win these games, which is awesome, and Russell will morph and adapt and do whatever he needs to do. But Jake, for you, who was the best play caller?
Yeah,
that you got to experience in your football career.
Yeah, I've got three guys for three different reasons. Number one is Steve Jervis. He was my head coach at Skyline High School, Hall of Fame high school football coach. He was incredible. Great football coach, great mentor, and was always calm. You just always felt that you were at ease no matter what the situation was, that everything was going to be okay. The second guy was Charlie Weiss. He was incredible at developing a 15-play script. And a 15-play script is kind of what you go into a game wanting to run in your first 15 plays. And Charlie was exceptional at it. I remember we were at Kansas, and Brock, actually, you called one of our games.
Sure did.
I was at Oklahoma.
Boomer Sooner.
And we were up 16-0 on Oklahoma. And he did that every single time for us, and we were able to get early leads. Unfortunately, we weren't able to keep them. But, you know, he was great at developing a beginning of the game plan. And Daryl Bevel, I thought, was a tremendous teacher. And not just for the position of quarterback, which a lot of offensive coordinators are, but to the entire offensive unit. He demanded that everyone knew their job and that he put them on the spot in front of the whole offensive unit to make sure that everybody was accountable so that I knew that, hey, Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson knew exactly what their job was. They knew exactly what their steps were going to be and their assignments on every single play. The running backs knew their assignments, the receivers, and it just created this kind of cohesiveness that everybody was on the same page.
That's awesome. If we have time, I got a Charlie Weiss story from working that game. Question
sure
number two for you.
I'm sure that one's great.
Is Patrick Mahomes, and you work with young QBs now,
yeah,
is Patrick Mahomes the most physically gifted QB in the league today?
Quoting Coach Carroll, I would say yes and yes and yes. He checks off every box. I mean, he's got the combination of arm strength, stature. His ability to throw off platform in an awkward body angles really makes him unique and special. And it's unlike anybody in the NFL right now. Mahomes, without a doubt in my mind, is a part of the next generation of superstar in the NFL. He's not there yet, but he is absolutely going to be one of those guys for years to come.
Five strongest arms in the league?
Absolutely. If not this.
Who else is on your list?
I wasn't ready for that one, but Russell actually has a really strong arm. He has a hose.
Stafford
is another guy. The other one that comes to mind right off the top is Aaron Rodgers.
Yes,
Aaron Rodgers is another guy that can really spin it.
The comparison last night is Favre.
Yeah,
you heard a lot of Favre when it comes to Mahomes and a young Favre, and Andy Reid was with a young Favre and Matt Hasselbeck and everything else in Green Bay. To my eye, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, Mahomes is more athletic than Favre. Favre could generate even more RPMs.
I fully agree with that. Yeah. When it came down to fitting it in a tight window, Favre absolutely generated the most RPMs. Now, Favre couldn't do some of the things that Mahomes can do.
Question three. You think we're going to see more and more of the college elements, and you can't help but watch that game last night. Andy Reid has said he's gone back and looked at what Mahomes did at Texas Tech as a Red Raider and brought those elements to the NFL game. Do you think we're going to see more and more of the college elements in the NFL game?
To much chagrin, yes. I think innovation is great. I love innovation, and I'm all for that. But I think this trend is going to continue to happen, not because these plays are so great, but because the lack of development that's going on in college football. It is a harder transition, and I know that's been said a lot as of late, but it's 100% true. The transition from college football to the NFL is more severe, more steep than it ever has been. And so for these young guys to be able to compete and be able to succeed at the NFL level, these offensive coordinators and head coaches are going to have to find these concepts, like Andy Reid has publicly said, to be able to help give these guys confidence to be able to function at a high level.
That's Coors Light's Blue 42. Do you know who Charlie Casserly is?
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know
the old, the old GM.
Yep.
Charlie Casserly was on the NFL Network. You got a big Kyle? Charlie Casserly was on the NFL Network, and he just said what you said to me just a few more few minutes ago.
This was when you do our research.
Out. Hold on, hold on. Yeah.
What?
What? Hold on. Sorry. I thought you were just going to, what do you do? I'm not going to answer specific questions. We didn't talk about that inside.
Well, okay, what do you do?
You don't ask me a question we haven't talked about.
Well, hold on. Let's go here. Yeah, let's go here.
Just ask me.
When you're doing, let's pretend you're the general manager for a minute, okay? Like, how does the process start?
Yeah,
that starts with questions, all right?
Gotcha.
How does that process start?
Well, the process starts. Well, are we live? What are we doing now? Are we taping or what are we doing?
We're live?
Live. No, well, then you start live. The whole thing. Hold on.
Oh, no. There's a little part of me when you said, I wasn't prepared for that question, okay? Unfortunately, in live TV.
I should have just let you have it right then and there, Brock.
Yes. No, we didn't talk about this before the show. I can't go there.
I can't do it.
Start the whole thing over.
Oh, we won't start the whole thing over, but I will tell you my Charlie Weiss story. You're right. You're right of me. We did call that game. You came out on fire. That was really fun. You came out on fire in Blue 42, but I got a Weiss story. But beyond any of that, Jake and I got a ton of questions to answer, and not our questions, your questions. You fired them our way on Twitter last night, and as Jake said to me this morning before we left the studio to come in, you're like, man, there's some really good football
questions.
Really good football.
We didn't talk about that inside.
Well, Charlie, we'll try to figure it out, and we did talk about all these, so we'll be prepped and ready. Jake's in for Salk. Brock and Salk at 710 ESPN Seattle.